It's episode 9, and I don't really know how I want us to come back yet, so brace yourselves. It's gonna get a little crazy. We've been doing a lot of changes in the studio, and one thing has been a little bit of a speed bump. And otherwise, guys, job well done. And it's not really our fault. It's all Amazon's fault. You see, we tried to order a new mixer on Amazon, only the seller never delivered the goods. We never received the item. They claim it shipped, but we never received the item. And it turns out they have like a 70% bad rating. Like, this is kind of their game. So many other reviews on Amazon said the same exact thing had happened to them. So we did the only thing left to do. We picked up the phone and decided to call Amazon.
Hi, thank you so much for calling in Amazon. My name is Robert, and I have your Amazon.com account right now. I've noticed you have a Prime subscription on your Amazon.com account. We really appreciate for being one of our Prime customers. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
With the Behringer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the issue is the issue with the Behringer is that I ordered it. I ordered it on April 18th, so we're now a month into this process. And I still have not seen the mixer. It still has not shipped. Contacted Amazon 4 different times, said, this is the issue. This is what I'd like to do to get resolved. The last thing I heard was they're going to use their A to Z guarantee to open up a, you know, investigation thing. And they're going to do this investigation and investigate some stuff. And then they're going to like get back to me. But I've not heard anything. I've not seen a refund come into the, to a gift card. I'd really like to get this resolved.
I see. And I'm so sorry to hear about it. I do see the claim that was filed against this merchant who sold in Shipyard, because based on what I'm seeing here,
yeah, 2 weeks ago,
it's supposed to be delivered way back on April 24th to April 27th.
Right.
And up until now, I don't see any updated information
right.
from the UPS, which is the carrier assigned for your shipment.
Yeah, we're at May 15th now.
Mm-hmm. And we don't tolerate those kinds of behaviors of the merchant who sold and shipped the item. Hold on, let me go ahead and take a deep look about the claim that was filed against the
receiver. I feel like they do tolerate it for a couple of weeks.
A refund,
deep look.
Okay? Just please do send a line, okay?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I do have the documents that we are talking about right now that you have mentioned, that you're asking initially. And here's the comment on that initial claim, saying that did not receive full order.
Uh-huh.
The customer waited for the item and it has never shipped. The tracking shows that the item is in transit to the carrier, but that has been since April 19. UPS has no record of this package besides that the label was created. The customer has contacted the seller multiple times and received no valid response. The customer needed this item due to his work, so now he has to order it from another place. Please refund as soon as possible. Based on the details, that is the exact claim that was made. Based on the record that we do have right now, the whole reason why, it's because this seller will issue a refund to you after you return the item, and that's the reason why I'm clarifying
I'm just it's almost comical to me, man. Listen to what you're saying. On one, you just read the text where it says that they never shipped the item, and then you tell me that you're waiting that the holdup is the seller is waiting for us to return the item. I don't even know what to – that you're saying two opposite things. They don't jive. I can't return an item I never got.
That's the reason why I'm clarifying it directly to our HSA claim guarantee team, who is currently investigating the situation right now.
Did they not read the original ticket? What information did you provide to them today that they didn't have 3 weeks ago?
The clarification that you never got the item and you don't need to return the item because you initially don't have it or you don't have the package on your end.
That was in
the ticket 3 weeks ago.
Which you read to me from the ticket that I didn't have the item and that they never shipped it. That's where my confusion is. I don't understand. It's like the sky is blue, and then 2 weeks later we go, the sky is blue. Oh, we didn't know that. Like, it was in the ticket originally. That's where my confusion is. But so moving forward again. So how long? When is this return going to be completed? You said it's 2 weeks from May 3rd, so that's May 17th. So that's within 48 hours.
Yes, exactly. That's the reason why I just provided that information right now, and they will review it within at least 24 to 48 hours within that day.
Okay, and then they will issue a return, and how long does that money take to go back into an Amazon gift card?
You've used your gift card for this order, so technically it may take at least 24 to 48 hours to reflect the gift card on your account.
Okay.
But that is the longest time.
Now, let me ask you this. Because this has made me go to some extraordinary lengths to try to get this equipment facilitated, you know, at my work, because I couldn't get it from Amazon. I can't get the money out of you guys. I can't get the equipment from them. Is there any possible way of getting like a check refund for this amount, or, you know, a Visa, you know, a preloaded Visa card or something like that, rather than just an Amazon card? Because at this point, I can't buy the mixer from Amazon again because I've already purchased it.
Unfortunately, Chris, we don't have that capability in doing that process, because it's currently coming directly from the merchant who sold the shipped item. Second, the claim is currently under investigation right now. They will automatically get back to you for the refund process of the item. And we don't have the capability to transfer this fund that we are talking about. I know that this is not a single dollar. It's cost $1,499.
I'm painfully aware, yes.
Was being built for a gift card. I do understand that you're concerned that you might not get the refund for the item. But
Hold on. I wasn't concerned about that up until 3 seconds ago. Why would I not get a refund for the item?
It's because the claim is under investigation, Chris.
Oh. Okay, so once the investigation concludes and then they actually read the notes where it says that they never shipped the item, then they will issue a refund, to the best of your understanding.
Exactly, that is correct.
Okay, great. And I can expect that to happen around the 17th. That would be 24 to 48 hours from now.
Please wait. Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Bye.
It's kind of ironic that we're talking about this today, because today is Amazon's birthday. Today they're worth two Walmarts on their birthday. And here I just want to get this entire thing resolved, because it's a huge chunk of change for us and it means nothing to Amazon, and they're still jerking us around. And this has been my experience, guys, is Amazon is great until they're not, and then they're really not great.
Well, go ahead. I've never actually had problems with Amazon, but that's because I do two things. First, I make sure that it's something that's Prime eligible. So if it doesn't get shipped, Amazon is on the hook. And second, and this is something I hate Amazon for, they kind of mix together the stuff that they sell and the stuff that they have on their Amazon marketplace sold by third parties. And they don't make it very clear, but if you go down below where the purchase button is, it'll tell you for more sellers. If you go to that, you can get a list of all the stuff that's sold by everybody, and I usually only order stuff that's fulfilled by Amazon. And if you stick to that, Amazon's great. But if you go outside of that, you kind of start getting into murky territory.
I'll go ahead and take the other side of that, Rick. I will say that I have found that there are certain sellers that it says it's shipped and sold by a third party. Adorama is a great example of this, but it's stocked by Amazon. So it's sold by Adorama, but it's actually in an Amazon warehouse. I don't exactly know how that works out. So, I mean, you have items like that. But the other thing is that we were under some other constraints, though, too, that I think need to be taken into consideration. And that is that it had to be ordered off of Amazon. So even if it wasn't Prime eligible, it was either we ordered off of Amazon from any seller possible, or we just don't get the item.
Well, no, I agree with that, but you yourself went to Amazon later, and there was several fulfilled by Amazon options there. And
yes.
Chris, I think, also saw that when he ordered it, but it switched it on him.
No, I don't think those sellers were available at the time that we ordered it. Because we used the same URL, and it then redirected to a completely different seller.
Correct.
Yeah.
In fact, this is one of the things that drives me a little batty about Amazon is they'll switch out the sellers from underneath a product URL. So the URL stays the same, the listing stays the same, the image stays the same, the reviews stay the same, but they change the shipper out from underneath it from time to time. And if you're not watching carefully, that'll bite you in the butt. That's what happened literally with this product because, yeah, now that we've had this problem and they've had a 70% poor review rating, they have all of a sudden switched to a different seller.
Yeah, that's why I always go to that more buying page, because then you can pick which seller you want to buy from and see what their specific rating is as well.
What I think is most surprising to me is that Amazon in general has been such a great service. I mean, I order 10 to 15 things a week, and that's no exaggeration. In fact, really, I'm probably underselling it. And I never have an issue with stuff, either from shipped and sold by Amazon or by third-party sellers. It almost always shows up on the expected arrival time or maybe even slightly before. And this was not just kind of bad, it was exceptionally bad, because not only did it not show up by the anticipated arrival date, we waited for 2 weeks.
Everyone here on this show, and I bet a bunch of you at home, use Amazon on a pretty consistent basis. And it's overall a pretty good service. In fact, I'm kind of a fan of some of their new streaming services and Prime features that they've launched. And then when it comes to the cloud, they're a dominant player like nobody else. And really, they're pretty good. I'm getting a little screwed right now, but hold on a second. Hold on. In totality, I really kind of like Amazon. I hope things end up working out, because obviously it's a big chunk of change to us. But we'll close it with this, just a couple of thoughts. Market cap right now, as Amazon crosses their 20th anniversary, is $459 billion. Walmart, $228 billion.
You know what's great? Both of those companies, they have so much money, neither of them can create a good fucking web interface.
Yeah.
You don't like Amazon's web interface?
It's garbage, man. The search sucks. The buying page is super confusing. They don't make it clear who you're buying from.
Yeah, I think, no, you like it only because it's been pretty consistent and you know how to work through it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, that must be it, because I find Amazon, I'll spend more money to buy something on Amazon. Well, one, because they have saved payment methods. Two, because everything is so consistent. But three, and most importantly, is because I have one canonical place to go check all of my things that I have bought.
And we'll take just a moment and thank DigitalOcean for sponsoring this episode of User Air. Now, the folks over at DigitalOcean have an offer for you. Use the promo code Here's the Thing. You would apply it to your account after you listen. I know this is confusing, and I can't send the beard over there to help you, but it's really simple. Just follow these steps. You go to DigitalOcean, you create the account, you apply the promo code, here's the thing, you get the $10 credits. Is that easy enough to understand, Rika?
Yeah.
How come people don't understand that?
I don't know. Maybe their super easy dashboard confuses people.
You know what I think it is? Is I think they see that dashboard and they get so excited that the euphoria just takes them away, and they completely lose track and they start spinning up droplets within seconds in data centers all over the world with that great easy to use dashboard. Oh my God, then there's the API. Listen, if you want to get a system up in the cloud in no time on their great infrastructure using all SSDs for unbelievable pricing, DigitalOcean's the way to go. From Nextcloud to the next big app to even a little extra, when you need it, infrastructure. DigitalOcean.com. Go check them out now with monitoring, scaling, all baked right in. It's a pretty sweet pie. DigitalOcean.com. Use our promo code. Here's the thing. Gentlemen, I got a problem, and I'm hoping one of you can solve it, and it's Telegram phone calls. I know you guys must be getting this too, where people are randomly calling you. I mean, I love everybody out there, and every one of them I want to hear from, but I don't know about a phone call. I don't really even take phone calls from family. Have you had this problem, Wimpy?
Yeah.
Noah?
I don't want to talk to everyone. I want people to send me messages. I would like to read those at a convenient and non-intrusive time, and I live in the central time zone, and so that means that sometimes at 4 or 5 in the morning, I will get a call on my phone from people in a Telegram group, or when I'm on the air, I'll get a call. And the thing is,
you know, can I give you a quick tip real quick? Just real quick tip. Dustin on Telegram, he does something I think is super clever. Look at his username there.
Yeah, I know. He puts the time offset. Yeah, a couple of people have done that. But the thing is, I think
you put that in your username. I don't know, man. I think it's...
I don't really like the look of it. What I found is, like, my kids are sleeping and my phone starts ringing. And the very thing that attracted me to Telegram to begin with was the fact that I didn't want my telephone number exposed. And so I could do that with just a username. And then Telegram came along and said, well, we'll just implement the calling feature right into Telegram.
I wonder if we maybe just have the very fix for this problem. Mr. Wimpers, do you have any suggestions?
Yes, fortunately, in the Telegram settings, in the privacy settings, you can define who you accept calls from, or who can actually initiate a call with you. So you can outright turn it off, or you can say just these people. And I've had to do that over the conference weekend, because when you get a Telegram phone call, because I'd never made a call or received a call prior to the conference, it's like your phone is ringing. So when my phone rings, there's only one person that calls me, and that's my wife. So I actually pick my phone out and just swipe an answer, because, and it wasn't. It was somebody else.
And, oh boy!
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been. How did that go? Because that must have been really funny.
Well, when I realized, I was like, well, it's daytime and I'm at a conference. I'm going to be polite, but I was thinking this is inappropriate. Because you don't just sort of cold call people. But then again, do you assume that because this technology has this feature, you can just use it to... Because a telephone call is much more personal than an exchange on a Telegram chat. And it's also immediate and direct. And for the same reasons that Noah explained, that's one of the things I love about Telegram. You know, when I join a Telegram group, first thing I do, mute all notifications. And I don't look for every Telegram message to reply to at a time that suits me. I look at what new messages there are in each of the groups, and I read them or skip the backlog or reply to things as it suits me.
Yeah.
But a telephone call is like, well, I'm here right now, right here. Let's talk.
There's no state awareness. Yeah. There's no presence awareness.
Yeah.
Speaking of groups, though, bit.ly/JBTelegram. We are launching an official Jupiter Broadcasting Telegram group.
Woohoo!
Whoop, whoop. So, yeah, that's where you go. It's bit.ly/JBTelegram. And that was my one other tip I was going to do. My little quick Telegram tip is I really like that you can pin groups. So while we were at Linux Fest this weekend, we had a Linux Fest group. So I just pinned that to the top for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
I think that's a nice feature.
Yeah. I mean, Telegram groups are a great way to communicate with a large group of people. And I think it's really good that, you know, JB has followed Ubuntu podcast lead in this respect and created, a new vibrant community on Telegram.
You guys are the trendsetters.
Yeah, we are. And it's ubuntupodcast.org/Telegram.
Very nice.
Telegram.asknoahshow.com.
Yeah, oh, there we go. Yeah,
you know, if we're all given plugs.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a perfect, because it's like it's got all the benefits of IRC with, you know, that whole backlog management for all built in there, and it's an expressive way to communicate as well.
Mm-hmm. Really, my favorite thing about it is it's omnipresent. Yeah. Right, so I have it on my phone, I have it on my desktop, I have it on my laptop, and in fact, I left my phone at the conference. Now, 10 years ago, 5 years ago even, that would have been a catastrophic thing. I would have been calling, you know, the maintenance guy to come let me in, because I could not live without my phone. And I walked back to see if the door was locked, but then I went, meh, I got my laptop, which has Telegram, which is really all I care about on my on my phone anyway. And I'll give a positive spin to this Telegram call thing. I could very quickly see if some provider came out with a data-only plan, like Ting, for example, that said, well, you could just pay for data and then I could just shut the minutes and messages off. I could very much see myself for the few phone calls I get saying, if you want to call me, you'll have to get on Telegram. Yeah. Just call me that way.
And actually, that works really well. When I was flying over here, I had the option for in-flight Wi-Fi, and it was £15 for 150 meg of data. Now, 150 meg of data is neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole flight, I was connected on Telegram, and I used Telegram to stay in touch with my family. So although I was able to message you guys and keep you updated on my progress of the flight and stay in touch with the people on the Ubuntu podcast and all the rest of it, I was also able to send messages to my daughter. And over the course of that flight, I only used up 60 megabytes of data. And all I was doing was Telegram and sending, you know, images backwards and forwards, taking photographs out the window for my daughter. And I said to my daughter, I said, as you grow up, this is probably going to be normal for you. But this is the first time that I've done this, you know, have Wi-Fi in a plane. And even though I'm so far away, I feel close to you because I can talk to you in this way.
And another hot tip for people that are flying in the U.S., Alaska Air and Delta and United are offering what they call the message pack. And for $2.59, it will allow you to use Telegram on the plane. You can't use anything else, but really? unlimited Telegram.
That's amazing.
Look at that. There's that. And so, and none of you are worried about the fact that it's probably some sort of Russian government spying machine. Does that?
No.
No.
I'm not using it for anything other than public discourse. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, messages turned from my wife about I'm going to be home for dinner at 6 mm-hmm. o'clock. Whoever's looking at that is welcome to it.
Enjoy, Vladimir. I got rid of Henry, and then today I got a push notification about a loud sound in the RV, and it's something getting knocked over in the RV. I swear to fucking God, dude, if I have another goddamn fucking rat, dude, I'm done with that junkyard. And you know what's weird? It's just last night, Hadi and I were having a conversation, like, do we want to move to Thousand Trails? Mm-hmm. You know, because there's something about it. You go out there, and it's just peaceful AF. It's just really – it's really kind of a very serene setting, and it just feels very relaxing. And we drove out there last night. We're like, yeah, let's move. And then we got home, and we're like, we just spent 2 hours driving.
This is super convenient.
Yeah, let's not move. And then I'm like, okay, yeah, we're going to stay here. We're good. We're set up for a little bit. Noah and I set up this cool metal trench thing for my dumping, and it's all pretty dialed in. And then – today I got that push notification about a slamming sound in the RV, and I really, if I have another rat, I just can't. I gotta go.
Well, the problem is, if you do have another Henry, you can't leave either until you get rid of him, because otherwise you're bringing him home to the new place.
Oh God, no kidding. And here's the other thing too, is like, there's a little bit of like, well, I just got done setting up. Like, I went home the other night, midday, I went home during like quote unquote lunch, and I like started the RV, and I raised the jacks, I brought all the slides in, I raised the jacks, and I like spent like 20 minutes repositioning it and putting pads down and getting everything all configured just right, so that way everything's level and it's a nice steady rig, and I got everything nice and steady, and then I powered up the NAS, I put out the awning, like we're home, like we're moved in, and now all the idea that I got to pack it all up because I'm keep getting infested by rats. And here's the thing, it's we're parked next to a giant barn, so of course it's full of rats. There's wild cats, there's rabbits, there's all kinds of other animals.
I'm surprised you haven't gone like super deep into technology on this, just like set up some kind of weird sonic net that drives them all away permanently.
Do you want to know the real reason why I haven't, besides the fact that I'm too busy?
Adia.
Why?
This is really embarrassing, but we have the cutest wild rabbits ever. And they're like cool, and they're not afraid of humans. They don't have any reason to, because they grew up and they were born in the junkyard. So like, they're just cool little wild rabbits, and they run around the RV, and I don't want to put the sonic blasters up because I'm worried it'll scare the rabbits off.
But won't your fiance be upset too if you resorted to some, because I mean, you could put like a little fence thing up and then just put a kill zone in between the fence and the RV, right?
That's the good thing about the sonic thing, is it keeps them away, but it doesn't hurt them.
Yeah, I know. I got to do it. I guess I got to do it.
Yeah. Because that's the only way that you can keep yourself happy for the most part, other than the bunnies, and keep Hadia happy because she likes animals, even if they're weird, disgusting ones.
I can't even believe I'm saying this. Like, the bunnies have, like, gotten into my head somehow. But there's just something about them, dude. They're so cute, and because they're not afraid of me, like, I can't help but like them, because it's like having a yard full of pets.
Just don't ever actually raise them, because A, they will become super vicious, and B, you will have a ton of them.
I have in the past when I was a kid, and I'm right. They have these claws.
Yep.
They have claws. They're like cats.
They're super nice until they're really not.
Yeah. What else you got there, Noah?
Let's see. Honestly, dude, I literally, since I've gotten back from Linux Fest Northwest, here has been my life. I crawl out of bed. I do the absolute minimum amount of work necessary, and I crawl back into bed and go back to sleep because I feel like I'm dying.
Wow. You guys,
I know,
you guys really need BioVeg. You really need BioVeg, bro.
Yeah. Are you not that bad? I feel like you got sick too.
You know what's funny?
I did, but I'm already like way better. Although now that I just had a couple of shots, I'm probably going to get sick.
I've been great. I just had juice and vitamins.
You have been.
Yeah. For the first time in my life, I'm actually considering going to a doctor. You know what?
Honestly, if I was
going to
put money on
anybody getting sick,
it was going to be you.
Yeah, because literally everybody that was sick basically hugged me.
Yeah, and yet you have – it's got to be the juice, dude.
It's juice that has full of vitamins, that naked juice. I am in love with naked juice. It's got nakedness and juice. How can it not be great?
Yeah, it really. So Rikai's doing the juice, I'm doing the intermittent fasting.
I've also started taking a multivitamin.
Have you?
Yeah,
good for you. I've been considering taking a prenatal.
Chris, do you have news for us?
I'm sorry, what? Actually, no, I'm kidding, but you know what I have been considering getting into?
Yeah.
Is
male pregnancy apparently?
Oh, having bone broth for breakfast.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
That sounds super unappealing to me.
I don't know anything about it, but I've heard good things.
Friends, don't get a case of the stupids. Go to Linux Academy, linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Go there and learn. Get your mind. Work out your mind. It's like Kegel exercises for your mind.
First of all, I think it's Kegel. Second of all.
No, it's Kegel.
Is it?
Yeah.
Also good for men, by the way. Not a, so don't.
It's true. How does that work?
Don't assume. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there and learn more and get inspired to mess around with Linux. It's all the basics around Linux, plus all the stuff that's going to make you money and make your resume look great. If you need to prepare for certs, there's no better resource. One of the reasons I strongly recommend Linux Academy is I know the people behind it, and I know they're passionate about Linux. They're like Noah passionate about Linux. They're like 4D chess players. They want to advance the Linux platform, and that is why they started Linux Academy. Go to linuxacademy.com/unplugged and sign up for a free 7-day trial. Kick it around. See what it's like. Download the comprehensive study, guys. See if you want some instructor mentoring, because they got real human beings. And then report back to me at ChrisLAS. Let me know how it went. And check them out on Twitter at LinuxAcademy.com. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. And a big thank you to Linux Academy for sponsoring User Error. When we were walking around the floor at Linux Fest Northwest this year, there's something that you can't ignore. There's a lot of Unity on the floor. There was almost any machine that was running Linux was running Ubuntu. And if it was running Ubuntu, it was probably running Unity, with obviously some exceptions. But on the whole, would you agree with the observation, Noah?
Yeah, I really would. And it was interesting because everyone I saw, I'd walk by and I would say to myself, what are they going to do? 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 Because you know it's coming to an end. And we thought we had an entire year to figure this problem out. Turns out we have just until October.
Well, I guess you have the LTS still. But one of the things that struck me about it is, where have all these people been? Where have they been? Because the conversation online has been for years that Unity is the worst thing that ever happened to the Linux desktop, and how bad Unity is. And now Unity, all of a sudden, is getting all of this love.
But those detractors probably weren't running Unity in the first place,
right? That's my thinking.
There's been loads of people silently running Unity and being quite happy with it. And now they're having to find an alternative. And what you find out is they liked all of the features in Unity, and now they're concerned where they're going to go next to get the features back that they value.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden they're giving voice to a section in the Linux community that we've sort of just pretended like doesn't exist. Now I say we just because I'm generalizing, but it is interesting that when a product is or a project is in active development, there will often be haters coming out of the woodwork, and then when we announce its ending, there's people that come out of the woodwork saying, "But you can't kill off the thing. I love it." Where were they? Where were they when everybody was arguing about it? And the problem with Unity is the real son of a gun, because it's not like ending a podcast. The problem with Unity is it solves actual problems for people. I mean, I know you've run into this. It solves actual problems. Did you notice anything on the floor? I mean, did you, when you were walking around, Wimpy, did you see things that people are using Unity for that you said they're not going to have a replacement for that?
Well, one of the things I'm aware of that I see when I go to conferences is when somebody walks up to the stand with an Ubuntu laptop and they plug the external connector in, the other monitors and the presentation equipment just works. You know, that sort of stuff just works well because there was effort put into multi-monitor support and external displays. And some of that work was sponsored by OEM partners for precisely that reason. So that's one thing, you know, I notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the monitor, yeah, the projector hookup. It's definitely, and I know you have clients that prefer Unity because it does certain things that other desktops don't use or don't do. Is that true?
Yeah, so I think that the multi-monitor support in Unity is second to none other any Linux desktop. That includes GNOME. The multi-monitor support for having 6 displays, for example, and the ability to arrange those displays, and then the ability to decide where the launcher is going to go and where the windows are going to align, what the primary monitor is I haven't seen that developed in other operating systems as well. And I'll give you an example. So, for example, in GNOME, the activities menu always goes at the far upper left, right, and that's always on the primary display. So if your secondary display, for example, is on the left monitor, when you throw your, if you want a setup where I throw my mouse to the far left and nail the corner, far left monitor, far top left corner to activate the activities menu, that can't, then my left monitor has to become the primary monitor. And I haven't found a way to tell it I want the monitor right in front of my face to be the primary monitor, but I want the activities menu to be on the left side of the screen, but I want the menu, the dock, to be on my main display. And I can do that in Unity. And Martin and I were talking, and you were explaining that that is a large function of the fact that Canonical takes small focus groups and really hones in and says, we are going to make the best, in this case, multi-monitor support that of any operating system. And then they just sit and nail that nail until it is perfected.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly these are initiatives that used to happen. And a multi-monitor is one of those initiatives that I was aware of a long time ago when I was outside the company. It was six screens specifically was a thing that was actually set up, worked on and polished. Another examples are power management and battery endurance. You know, there was work done to have sane defaults out of the box so you didn't have to fiddle with it. That was some time ago now, but, you know, that work carries over. And that was proper, you know, multimeter and power outage, you know, measurement equipment to actually make sure that the changes were significant and reasonable and didn't have detrimental side effects.
The other thing I've noticed is when I go into a client operation and you have a lot of people that don't have a lot of familiarity with Linux, one of the things that I think Unity does very well is because that dock is right along the side, because there are sane defaults on that dock, there is, you know, a browser, a file manager, a word processor, a spreadsheet application, those are all there for that user to use. It is instantly usable without any sort of training, and so much so that we've actually used these in kiosks, public kiosks, for people to get onto the internet. And I do have some concerns that, for example, GNOME will hide that launcher menu. And if you don't know to send your mouse to the upper left activities corner, you may not know how to get to your next application.
Yeah, I do agree, you know, that there is some sanity in having those hard defaults, you know, in Unity, because it's all laid out. It's presented consistently and it's obvious where you need to go to do things. Unlike the GNOME defaults, and I do agree, some things hidden away that have assumed knowledge before you can access them. But I think some of the people that didn't like Unity didn't like it because it was so rigid and constrained. And that's fine, right? Because we've got lots of choice in desktop Linux. You can find something else, from tiling window managers to alternative desktop environments. Maybe what those people should have been doing, instead of just repeating the mantra that Unity was rubbish, which persuades people who are coming into the ecosystem for the first time that maybe this isn't what they should be using, but they don't know why, they haven't developed opinion for themselves. Positive action is better than negative, and I don't like seeing just don't use this, don't use this, this is rubbish. I prefer to say, well, I use this for these reasons because I like these features. These are things, if these things are important to you, then you might like this thing that I like as well. I don't like this dogma of just knocking things because that's, you know, it's just not constructive.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder, though, if what we're talking about isn't just a problem that a bunch of other communities also face. Like, this must be an issue in large gaming communities, right? Because what we're really dealing with here is the temptation to share your opinion online about something and have a strong conviction and be an advocate of that conviction. You guys made a decent case for outlining the positive aspects of Unity. Obviously, the negative aspects for a lot of people, they were upset about moving away from GNOME. They were upset about some of the more rigid aspects of Unity's configuration. And so for them, it became a bit of a campaign to a degree. And it's a weird thing to me, though, because at the same time I can understand their position, I don't understand the desire to sort of go out of your way to tear something down. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And let me see if I can reframe the discussion just a little bit. I don't see it so much as them wanting to tear people away from Unity. What I have seen is that people have a preference for a different desktop, and so they try to tell people there is a quote-unquote better experience out there on Linux. But really, I really question the position that Unity is such a rigid desktop. I don't know. Is there anything in Unity that I can't do, but I could do in, for example, GNOME?
When I say rigid desktop, I just mean some hard choices were taken for you that would maybe great. That would be my definition. So buttons on the left, those kinds of things that are just sort of in your face a little bit. I think maybe.
But can't those be changed?
Not anymore, no.
But I mean, that's always, you know, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just guessing maybe. I don't really know because the reason why actually made me think about this is we have a machine here in the studio that was sort of reset up recently and it's running Unity and I really just have no problem with it. I find it to be really efficient and straightforward. And I've noticed the trend, and you know, the Beard and I have had a couple conversations about it too, about the trend of people now just loving on Unity online. And I wonder, I don't know, Rikai, what are your thoughts? Is this a larger trend or is this specifically an open source community thing that we just can't get over?
No, I think it's basically just humanity, because
oh good.
No matter what community you go into, there are always going to be a group of people that are just going to crap on anything, and I don't think that there's really a way to solve it. Like I think you're going to see the same thing over in the GNOME community once Ubuntu transitions.
Oh really?
Yeah, there's going to be a whole bunch of people that say GNOME makes these choices, they lock things down, they don't let you change it easily, and it's just something we're going to have to live with, I think.
So I slightly disagree. I think that part of the divisiveness of Unity was because Unity was primarily used on Ubuntu, and it was developed in-house by Canonical, and so it wasn't seen as a general community effort, whereas GNOME, people from OpenSUSE contribute, people from Red Hat contribute, even people from, you know, Canonical contribute, and so it's seen as like this universal desktop rather than the Ubuntu desktop.
I don't agree with that at all. There's already people that say that the GNOME project has a vision and they're following that vision, and anything that you don't want or anything they don't want to do isn't going to get pulled in upstream. So
yeah,
it's already there. We've had this conversation all up.
I have a different thesis on that as well. I think Ubuntu, when it was running GNOME 2, was a lot of people's first introduction to Linux. Mm. It was their first Linux love, their first Linux girlfriend, right? They used it for many years. It was really refined, really polished, and you could get a lot of stuff done with it. And everyone was happy with it, by and large, I think, right? And
there
was
very functional.
Very functional. And there was two competing desktops right then. It was GNOME and KDE, and that was the two main camps that people fell into, with perhaps some people using XFCE and LXDE. Then Unity came along. And this is my thesis, not the company's. Ubuntu murdered everyone's first girlfriend. And I think that's where a lot of the bad feeling and hate came from for Unity, because what everyone had fallen in love with had changed. She'd grown up. She graduated from university, and she wasn't the same girlfriend that they fell in love with 5 years before.
Yeah, I could buy that. I can buy that premise, but I wouldn't. I don't know if I could lay all the blame at Canonical's feet, because it was the GNOME project that killed GNOME 2. It wasn't Canonical.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think that people – there was a big falling out as well, you know, in that period,
right,
when GNOME 3 was developing.
A public falling out, too.
Yeah, yeah. And that was messy. And I think that, you know, you get some partisan ship as a result of that, you know, people picking sides.
Yeah, I could totally see that. And then it just devolves into there, and then everything comes into – it's basically – now the parameters of the war are defined, and it just rages on. It goes on. And I guess the part of the conversation I wouldn't mind touching on, because my takeaway from it is you can walk away from the internet with an opinion that is completely, completely distorted from the reality. So in China and India, where they're selling tens of millions of Linux machines running Unity and Ubuntu out of the box, like none of these conversations take the reality into account, or that so many users are using it every day and not complaining. But if you go by what the web says, it's an obvious fact of statement that Unity is terrible and you should use anything else. But it is completely detached from reality.
I think that it depends on what reality we're talking about, right? So if I even talk about the reality of conferences, right? If I go to Southeast Linux Fest, for example, there is a starking lack of Unity. There's a lot of GNOME. There's a lot of Xmonad.
I'm tracking.
Scale is another the same thing. You see a lot of GNOME. You see a lot of
Max.
Xmonad. There are a couple Macs too. But as far as Linux desktop goes, I think that Unity is very much, you know, the underdog, and so
amongst Linux advocates.
Yes.
Enthusiasts, maybe.
Yeah, right. There you go.
So if we're talking about reality, then we're talking about either the reality of, you know, home or developer, you know, whatever the primary user over is in Asia, versus the developer Linux enthusiast market that we're a part of. but those are the communities that I exist in, and so that is my reality.
Well, and this is actually a question for the beard, is I wonder if it does actually matter, even if their perceptions don't match reality. Is this group sort of the leading opinion-making group?
Yeah, I feel like when developers go to do things, they're primarily looking at the internet. So when they see a lot of complaints, it's probably, you know, making them feel kind of like crap when their software's getting crapped all over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Wimpy, did you see Gaming on Linux did a long interview with a bunch of different game developers and asked them, What makes your where does Linux gaming fit on your priority list? Why is it not higher? Why is it this? Did you see this roundup he did?
Mm-hmm.
And in there, it did seem like the thing is these developers, they're in these communities. They're on the subreddits. They're in the forums. They're engaging on Mastodon and all these places. And they are seeing the hate. And there was one interview that he had specifically where I think it's Liam, right?
Is that? Yeah, Liam Doe.
Yeah, he had one in there specifically where he said, you know, we started going down one track and then we just read a bunch of hate about it. And then so we went down another track and read a bunch of hate about it. And then we just decided we'll come back to it later.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking to somebody at the conference this weekend and they were working out in their mind a talk they'd like to do next year, which is basically a Linux community introspection. Think about what you're writing about Linux. Are you being an advocate? Are you being an enthusiast? Or are you just adding to the pot of hate that puts people off? And games development studios are a perfect example because they've not been treated well. You know, when they've released some of their games on Linux and it hasn't gone so well, they've been some pretty toxic, you know, feedback from the Linux community. And perhaps we should be a little bit more welcoming for these studios that are coming to Linux for the first time, maybe giving them a free pass at their first efforts at bringing their games to Linux.
A free pass, though?
Well,
I mean,
not a free pass.
They're charging for a product.
Okay, not a free pass, but maybe not being so horrible about their technology choices.
Beard, did you want to say it? You go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying that a lot of the hate comes off as kind of vitriolic. Like, it's not just hate. It's like
judgmental hate.
Yeah, it's judgmental hate. And sometimes it feels like it's just like super personal.
Yeah.
Hmm. This is an interesting predicament because the community itself is particularly technical. So, you know, they have a lot of merits for some of their arguments. And they would say they would argue the information's out there. So if you make the wrong choice, then you haven't done your research properly.
That's a fair point. Although I think for all of the technically competent people that are out there, a lot of these arguments you see put forwards in the discussion forums and Reddit and various online communities stray far away from technical merit, you know, in their criticism. It is often misinformed and very partisan and inaccurate.
Hmm. Well, we sound like a bunch of grumps. What do you think, Noah?
I think that so I'll tell you my first experience with this kind of thing. It wasn't in the gaming community, but it was actually when Lightworks first came out. And I sat down to use Lightworks, and I realized how horrible the user interface was. And after about a week of watching YouTube tutorials and figuring things out and purchasing, you know, specialized hardware to use it, I finally got it to work, and then I was very pleased, and I said, okay, that's really great. So I went to look to see if it would run on Fedora, because at the time that was the distribution I was using. And I found this very elaborate post from a bunch of people that were petitioning every Fedora user to try to convince other people not to use Lightworks until they made a port for Fedora. And what it exemplified for me was this idea that here is a company that's trying to make a video editor on Linux, and they are targeting the largest Linux distribution out there, and instead of the Linux community being grateful and saying, okay, let's take this deb and let's figure out how we can make this work in Fedora, which is a thing that people do all the time. People did it for GNS3 when that first came out. Now, instead, we're complaining about the fact that this company is marketing towards the largest Linux distribution. I thought, what a bunch of ungrateful internet users that would treat a company like this. And why would Valve want to come over to Linux? Why would anyone want to make a product? Because no matter what distribution they pick, it's the wrong one to somebody.
Boy, that is – ooh, I was hoping you were going to bring us up. We have all of us spent many years involved in internet communities, and it does seem to be a bit awful. I don't know. I was hoping we'd have a positive spin on this, to be honest with you guys, because it feels like this is a significant issue, which at first seems like, oh, it's just a bunch of gray beards, or it's a bunch of neck beards, or it's a bunch of alpha geeks arguing online. But then you realize it does seem to extend out to some real ramifications. I think there's people that we're all familiar with in charge of very large, important projects that are fairly well-known figures, and I think you're starting to see even them are burning out based on some of the feedback, and I think it could have huge ramifications for desktop Linux. Sorry, Mr. Beard.
There's also the other side of the coin where there is a there are groups that are super positive, but they're in an echo chamber where they ignore the problems with some of the stuff, and that's also not a good thing.
Hmm. Are you implying someone we know? Or, I mean, I'm trying to think.
No, just I've been in projects before where, like, they ignore, like, fundamental problems with their software.
Oh, sure.
That they just think it's not a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll give you an example. I had a guy walk up to me at Linux Fest Northwest. Nice guy. So, and in fact, we talked a lot, and this is just my example. But he came to me and he said, so I've been walking around the fest here, and I want to convert people to my distribution that I'm building. And I got kind of a unique idea. It's going to be a GNOME 3 base, and installation, you choose either Windows or Mac OS, but I want to nail it in a way that nobody else has ever done. I'm not really a developer myself, but I'm getting really, really close. I got stuff I can start to show people. It's really exciting, and I'm kind of getting the pulse of the audience as I walk around Linux Fest Northwest. And the main problem is that everybody's saying, don't base it on OpenSUSE. I went, oh, really? Yeah, so what do you think I could do to educate them, to get them to try out OpenSUSE? I went, oh, well, you've already lost the battle. It's not a matter of if open... So he's like, he's got all these reasons why it's great to base it on OpenSUSE. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to him, and they're all pretty sound technical arguments. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, the market just doesn't care. You see, there's so many other factors at play that... So he's going around, and I guess the big thing he was getting was Arch. Base it on Arch. And he's like, I just don't understand how to convert them from Arch. Like, why is everybody like Arch so much? And I tried to explain, it's not really like a preference thing. It's not about you educating. It's that there's momentum in a market towards a direction. And you just kind of have to accept that it's not always just the technical merits on its own. But he really couldn't – I really don't believe it landed. He really couldn't see past it. He really thought, if I could convince them to try this on OpenSUSE, then they'd switch and then they'd try out my desktop. They just didn't know. They just needed to be enlightened. And it's this type of advocacy where we can get so caught up in the technical ideals or how something works or why this is a great idea that we can't really step back and fully appreciate all the market forces at play, probably because we can't see them all. It's really easy to define all the technical reasons, but it's not easy to define the preferences of the market. You know, we were having a conversation earlier, and it was, why is Ubuntu on Dell machines selling like hotcakes in parts of the world, but just not like selling as much in the States? Like, it could be tons of sales, say, over in India. It could be you go into an electronics store and there could be some Windows machines over here or whatever, and then here on the other aisle, here's the Ubuntu machines. That could be a standard thing, and there's in parts of the world where that is just a standard thing, but it doesn't get traction here in the States. What is it?
I would argue that, and this is based on both our conversations, what we've talked about, but in addition, my own personal experience, a lot of that comes from a social construct. You have a lot of people, a vast majority of people that want to, and the example I always go to is this lady in Best Buy, and I've cited it a couple of times on the air, but I was standing in Best Buy and I was listening to this conversation between her and the salesman. She said, I need a computer and I check pictures of my grandkids on Facebook. I write letters to my aunt and I check my email. Oh, and sometimes I play that Farmville game on Facebook too. So what computer would be best for me? And the Best Buy guy said, well, this MacBook Air, this 13-inch MacBook Air for $1,000, this would really be the best computer for you. And I understand why he made that recommendation, because if he sells her a Windows computer, she's got to deal with all the bloatware that comes onto it, which means she's got to take it to the Geek Squad to get all that removed before she can even take the computer home, which is a couple hundred dollars. Who knows what's going to happen if they push out another update or something. So that seems to be a stable choice. And at the same time, a Linux computer would fulfill all of those needs, plus give her the freedom and not vendor lock into one specific hardware manufacturer, she probably could have saved a couple bucks.
Yeah.
But because we don't have a product like that in stores, and because people are grown basically in the education system to say, well, I need to use Microsoft Office. I need to learn Photoshop. I need to learn this, that, and the other. We don't learn that. We don't ever recognize that there are other tools that can accomplish the same tasks in the vast majority of cases. And certainly there are fringe examples of people that are in specialized industries that may need specific software. But
so this would be – this proves my point. There is exactly what you just said. There is a solution out there that is a significant lower cost that has the same if not better functionality and security. But – even though that is a technically true statement, it literally is not a factor in the market here.
It's not accessible. If it's right. not on shelves in shops, then it's not going to gain traction.
Exactly.
And what we see with Dell's uptick is they're not selling to that lady who just wants to talk to her family. They're targeting developers who are internet savvy shoppers, and they will go online to Dell and they will look through and they will customize their order to suit their needs precisely.
Hmm. All right, so I say, Beard, the final word on this. If that's true, then does the geek discussion online actually matter? If the people that are really buying these are these folks that aren't, does it matter? Does it matter? Does it actually, this entire community hoopla we just discussed, with this in consideration, the market forces, does it matter?
Well, I think it doesn't matter if it matters because...
I like that.
Because... everybody's caught up in their own mental narrative, and they all end up in these places online, and all these narratives conflict. So there's always going to be conflict no matter what you do. So it doesn't matter if it matters.
I'd say it does matter, because I think a lot of the hateful comments that exist out there are starting to burn developers out, and they're starting to think, why am I putting up with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my counter is that it's an unsolvable problem. Because of the way that humanity is.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And here's the real bugger of it all is if it does begin to have an impact, there won't be immediate evidence unless somebody writes some flamey blog post as they go out the door. Mostly things will just spin down. Things that we've had for a while will just sort of stop. But, you know, new developers come on. New community is always brought in. So it is sort of a cycle of renewal. It's sort of like the circle of community, guys.
Yeah, I think Linux is specifically suited to combat it because it will just it's iterative, so it'll just continue to go on and on.
So I wonder how much of that mentality, that attack dog mentality. You know, I'm gonna slam you down. I'm gonna say something to put you in your place because you're wrong. I'm right. This is my belief, and these are the reasons why. Not necessarily accurate, but more that over assertive aggressiveness. I do wonder how much of that is people being influenced by Linus's tone and behaviour, and are they trying to be poor facsimiles of Linus because this is the tone that he uses, this is the style and the aggression that he has in some of his language, and do they think they fit into the Linux community by emulating that sort of aggressive style of communication to being very forthright?
Yeah. I would be inclined to say no. Because I think it's more – I think it goes deeper. I don't want to play armchair psychologist, but what I think it's more about is arguing your point of view to reaffirm your belief system. And when somebody says something that goes against your belief system, it becomes incredibly important to your own ego that you defend that thing, because otherwise you'd have to start questioning your position. So you double down on it. I think that leads to a personal anger because it's something that's important to them has been challenged, and it's got to be attacked. And I think that's where the velocity comes from. Mm. Because I don't know. I guess I could concede there might be some tone being set, but that would suggest an awful strong amount of influence.
Yeah, I just wish people would be more respectful. For example, at the conference, I introduced myself to the guys from Fedora and the guys from OpenSUSE. And there's a little bit of gentle banter between us and a little bit of ribbing, you know, we're the competition and ha-ha and all the rest of it. But we had a perfectly respectful debate. We had different opinions. We were able to trade technical benefits and merits of each of our approaches to problems. And we did it with smiles on our faces, and it was perfectly amicable. And if the organizations and the people that represent those organizations are able to have respectful discourse, why can that not be the way that the general community behaves as well?
I think it's largely because people in general, I know this is just my experience from the Linux Action Show, when I go on the air and give a very positive review about something, of a project or service that I really, really like, and I'll give you an example, SimpleHelp. There really are very few things I don't like about it. There's a couple. It's Java-based. There are a couple little things that irk me. But for the most part, it's a fantastic project that's accomplishing something that literally no other software is. And if I go on the air and say that, I get accused of trying to get SimpleHelp to sponsor something. When I went on the Ask Noah show and I talked about how great Stripe is and how great the SquarePay is, neither of those companies have given me anything. They're just very, very good products. They're very, very good services. And when I go and talk about them, they say, well, it just sounds like a big advertisement. I don't like that. Now, if I went on the air and told you everything that was wrong with Stripe, and I told you everything that was wrong with SquareCash, and I told you everything that was wrong with SimpleHelp, I doubt there would be many people that would say, well, yeah, that's no good. They like to hear that. If you say something positive, you're being bought off. If you say something negative, you're honest and you're truthful. That's just my experience. I'm not saying that's reflective.
I would agree. I've definitely seen some of that. Yeah. I think that's probably somewhat fair. And you end up having to be a dick and put like five disclaimers in the video. This is not a paid endorsement. And then you just come across sounding like a goober. I've been thinking about taking the DuckDuckGo challenge. Here's my thinking, is I don't quit Google completely, but I default to DuckDuckGo, and then when it doesn't deliver what I want, then I switch over to the Google. Like a little DuckDuckGo challenge all the way, like on my searches, because I'm starting to get a little paranoid. I was researching Mother's Day gifts and stuff, then I was researching rings and stuff, just for different reasons. And now I'm getting a bunch of ads about engagement, or I'm getting a bunch of ads about... Also, the other thing that was really weird is when Hadi and I announced our engagement, I started getting all kinds of new ads about wedding rings and places to get married. It's just creeping me out a little bit. So I've been considering doing the DuckDuckGo challenge, and I wondered if Noah would be willing to do it with me.
Absolutely.
What about you, Beard?
No, because I've already done it, and the DuckDuckGo challenge ended up being the DuckDuckSuck challenge.
What?!
It is terrible. As somebody that spends his life searching for things, I don't know how I could live without Google at this point. Like, it is just so much better than anybody else's search engine.
So I'm going to duck duck it. Give me something to duck. Can you give me a duck duck thing that would fail? First of all, I'm going to Google duck duck real quick.
It's duckduckgo.com, Chris. I know.
All right. So because here's the thing is DuckDuckGo doesn't store personal information. They don't follow me around the world with ads, and they don't track. So I just
the problem is because they don't do that stuff, they don't surface the stuff that's relevant to you. They just give you generic results.
Okay. Well, so before you go any further, Noah, you and I we'll talk more in user error 10, but I feel like what you and I should do is just set a week, because it's going to obviously it's going to affect maybe your troubleshooting at work, and it's going to affect my show research, but we'll just
that's what makes it valuable though.
I agree. So you and I will set a week, but first, Beard, so tell us why you're going to opt out, and then that means you can be judge and arbiter, so I'm okay with that, but what was your experience?
It's really hard because I don't remember anymore what I searched, but when I search for stuff on Google, and I compared that with stuff I searched on DuckDuckGo, I got completely different results, and the results I got in Google were exactly what I wanted, and the results I got in DuckDuckGo were kind of like using MSN search before even Bing, where it just gave you the random results that might have had some of the keywords you searched for, but didn't really give you what you wanted.
Okay, so I have a suggestion, unless you have another example, but I was thinking, let's search for like Arc Dark Theme for Arch.
Sure.
And see what DuckDuckGo gives us. Because that would be like a typical search for me, just for myself personally.
I would suggest just searching Arc Dark Theme and see if you get results for Arch.
Arc dark theme, and I will copy that and I will paste it into DuckDuckGo. I'm looking at the results. The first result is GitHub, the GitHub Arc theme. And the second result is a Firefox theme. That's pretty good, actually. This is all in DuckDuckGo so far. Now we're getting down to our third GitHub result, fourth GitHub result. To be honest with you, these another Arc Firefox theme. I actually would be kind of curious to play with that. But now we're getting off into the weeds on DuckDuckGo. But that's all actually pretty relevant. Just for comparison, I'll do the search on now Google. First one is GitHub, the same exact result. Second one is Firefox, same exact result. Fourth and fifth results are quite a bit different. So in Google's case, now we're getting an OMG Ubuntu article on how to install the Arc theme and Noobs Lab. Oh, dude, there's an Arc Chrome theme, apparently, which I'm now getting results, which I'm going to install right now. Okay, so I did take action on the Google results. That is slick. I like that. Hey, guys, by the way, I'm going to throw this in the user error show notes. There is an Arc theme for Chrome.
See, that's generally what I find with DuckDuckGo is the first couple results are somewhat relevant, but after that, it gets kind of crappy. But usually, when I'm Googling for something, I don't find the stuff I want in the first couple results, and it's the contextual results that Google adds later down the page that I end up finding what I need because it's usually more esoteric stuff.
All right, so we'll report back in user error 10. Noah and I, starting right now, will take the DuckDuckGo challenge for a week, and we'll report back in 10. Does that sound fair to you, Noah?
That works for me. I'm switching it right now.
We're just getting started here at User Error, and we want to hear from you. JupiterBroadcasting.com/contact, and just choose User Error from the dropdown. Feedback, your ideas, all of your personal information, like your social security number if you're in the States, your birth date, bank routing information. You know, the things I would need to know, like if you have a high balance PayPal account, put it all in there. JupiterBroadcasting.com/contact. Also, Jupiter Signal, Patreon.com/JupiterSignal if you want to support the show.
I hear that if you like the imagery that we're using for this show, we're posting that over on Patreon.
God damn it.
You were doing so good.
You were doing good, dude. Okay, hold on. Try again.
I hear that if you like the imagery that we're doing for the show, we're posting that over on our Patreon feed for people that are supporting us just as a kind of a thank you.
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. Yeah, and while you're at that contact page, we need your suggestions for better chairs. Nothing too expensive and nothing that sucks. Our butts hurt. JupiterBroadcasting.com/contact. Don't laugh.
We're going with that.
No, here's what you should have said. Here's what you should have said, Chris. What you should have said is,
no, that's perfect.
I think it works, dude. I think it works.
I don't know. I would have said okay.
No,
okay.
You're barred. Shut up.
I what?
Your butt hurts, dude. Just own it, man. Just own it. Your butt hurts. It's fine.
Our asses have taken a pounding over the years.
I'm crying.
That's your intro right there, dude.
Our asses have taken a pounding over the years. Welcome to Unfilter. Wait.
Nope. Wrong show, dude.
Not even a little bit.
I like that I'm not the only one getting
lucky. User error, even.
Far out.